Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today, ISF CEO Steve Durbin and I discuss the highlights from the series of conversations we've featured on the podcast over the last several weeks. Steve, thanks for being here, as always. Today, we review our season and consider some of your takeaways, both in terms of business leadership and also in terms of the actionable insights our members can take away. Let's start with an overview of our first episode this season, Steve, your interview with David Thornwill, DHL CISO. You and David discussed the ever-changing role of the CISO, the challenges and practical strategies in building a culture of security throughout a multinational corporation with more than 500,000 employees, and preparing for future threats. I know you really enjoyed that conversation, and I'm curious what some of your key takeaways were.
Yeah, I did enjoy talking to David. I think it's always nice to talk to CISOs, and particularly those that are looking after, you know, very, very large businesses. I mean, you made the point that DHL has got more than 500,000 employees. And so some of the challenges, you know, of getting some of the messages across, how you manage security across that, it was fascinating to hear David talk about. And there were some really key takeaways for anybody who is at any stage of their security career from a CISO standpoint. You know, he talked about awareness. We went into that in quite some detail about how he'd managed to get such a large number of employees to align with some of the policies and the processes that he had deemed to be necessary across the business. So that was really interesting, I thought, to hear how he'd gone about doing that. The second thing, and this is probably, you know, music to the ears of very many CISOs out there, was really just listening to him talk about the relationship that he has with the business. Now, you know, you and I on various podcasts have talked about that. And so it was nice to be able to get firsthand insight really into how that relationship had evolved. And he made the point that it didn't happen overnight. You know, I think it took him something like 3 years, I think he said, to get to the point where business executives, C-level, were actively engaged in things like cyber exercises, understood the importance, the role that security had to play in the strategic direction that DHL was headed in. And it's an immensely complex business. So to be able to get to that level of understanding, I think, with business leaders was really instructive and I think insightful and probably quite encouraging for very many other CISOs who are perhaps on that journey, shall we say.
You know, one of my favorite conversation points with him was I remember him emphasizing the need for rest to turn off as well, which I really appreciated. I think that that is an undervalued part of doing business and creative thinking is taking a break.
No, that's right. It's about space, isn't it? You know, it's creating space. And I think that he did make that point. And you're right. You know, I think it's been all too easy, particularly during the pandemic. So what, for the last 2 years, for people to have become glued to their screens. And as we know, that does nothing to help either your mental health and well-being. And actually, it opens up opportunities for attackers too. So I think that was a point that was very well made.
Well, let's turn our conversation now to your interview with Mark Gibson, who is on the other end of the spectrum from David Thornwill's 500,000 employees to Mark, who's the owner and CEO of D3 Technologies, a company that helps small to medium enterprises blend their people, processes, and technology. What do you recall from that conversation?
This was a really important conversation for me because I think in very many of the podcasts that we do, you know, we talk to people who are involved with very large businesses or government officials and, you know, this sort of thing. So we're very often giving that large company, large enterprise perspective. And I think it's quite easy to forget that the vast majority of the workforce actually works for small medium-sized enterprises. And it doesn't matter where in the world you are, whether you're in the United States, whether you're in the UK, whether you're in Germany. You know, our economies depend so much on the small enterprise. And so to talk to Mark specifically about that, with that very, very keen focus on, so what does security mean at the small business end of the scale, was really interesting. And I think he came up with some good points as well, not just for small business, but also for large scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciated that David Thornwell's insights could be applied to smaller companies and Mark Gibson's insights can be applied to large companies. And I appreciated that we had such a range in those first two episodes. We went from that conversation into a timely discussion of 5G, what it is, what shifts will come as we transition from 3 and 4G to 5G, how we can keep our operations and supply chains secure as 5G rolls out. It seems like with everything going on, the security of transportation, of utilities, of fuel supplies is more important than ever, and that directly relates to that 5G conversation. Is that right?
It does. And I think some people sort of looking at all of those different episodes that we put together in this series might have, you know, raised an eyebrow or two about why we were covering 5G at that point. But for me, 5G is going to be, you know, the future infrastructure that we're all going to be using. And so I think that, you know, having talked about large enterprise, then moved on to small enterprise, it was appropriate for us to just spend some time just looking at some of the new infrastructure and some of the challenges that that will really bring, I think, at both ends of the spectrum. So if you look at it again through that sort of small company lens, you know, what does 5G actually mean there? Well, it means that you have to have a better, I would say, deeper understanding of exactly what IT is doing. And I think Mark, you know, in that podcast did make that point. But I think 5G brings that home. So are we going to see, for instance, the need for small, medium-sized enterprises to start to have people dedicated to really understanding infrastructure? At the larger end, and you've mentioned, you know, drones and transportation and oil pipelines and that kind of thing, at the larger end, we know that 5G brings with it huge challenges in terms of just the speed at which very, very large amounts of data are being transferred. Now, that facilitates, of course, a lot of the way in which we're going to be doing business. If we think about things like autonomous vehicles, if we think about the Internet of Things, if we think about just generally the way in which we're going to be rolling out our business processes and programs. But it also opens up significant opportunities for cyber criminal, for cyber attacks. So that we have to balance out, I think, threats, issues, challenges against, you know, the way in which we can really take advantage of some pretty impressive technology that is going to become all pervasive within a very, very short space of time. So I think it was timely for us to just get into that 5G section in a little bit more detail, because as I say, that's going to be fueling the growth of very many organizations going forward.
Mm-hmm. Right. Then we went from 5G into your conversation with Stephen Poloz, or Sunny Steve, as The Economist called him. That's often what I call you behind your back as well. Or will from now on. I like it. The two of you talked about some of the themes in Stephen Poloz's recently released book, The Next Age of Uncertainty, How the World Can Adapt to a Riskier Future. You discussed very timely topics, communicating in the midst of crisis, how the fourth industrial revolution compares to past moments of change in history, and risk management and resilience amidst global turmoil. Tell us about that conversation.
Yeah, this was a conversation that I had sort of mixed views on this, because as with a number of our podcast guests, you know, they've written books and I do try to read those before talking to them. And so right at the beginning, I was quite apprehensive because Stephen is, you know, he's a world-renowned economist. He was the governor of the Bank of Canada. And so I was just wondering how the conversation was going to go, particularly when, you know, as you say, the title of his book was How the World Can Adapt to a Riskier Future. But what was interesting mm-hmm. for me was that he could draw parallels very easily, very readily, between the sort of work that he'd been doing in terms of managing risk, which is, of course, so much what CISOs are having to do today. So how he could manage that risk in a financial environment and the relevance of some of those processes, steps that he took to what CEOs and CISOs themselves are having to deal with. So, you know, an example was breach management. You know, he talked a lot about transparency, about the need to communicate, about how to communicate. Those really sort of hold true, I think, in any business that is going to have to go through at some point some kind of cyber incident, whether it be a breach or an attack or simply just downtime. So lots of different things mm-hmm. that I perhaps hadn't expected going into that conversation that I think were really relevant for our audience. And it was just a nice different perspective, I suppose, that people can listen to for what it is, but then also take into, as I say, this very fast-changing environment that we're having to deal with from a cybersecurity standpoint, particularly at the moment.
Well, we've had a number of great experts on this season, including Alexander Sager, the head of the cybercrime division at the Council of Europe. So that was where we went next. You and Alexander discussed ways to promote cooperation between private businesses and law enforcement agencies, the challenges of investigating and prosecuting cybercrimes across multiple jurisdictions, and recent developments with the Budapest Convention on Cybercrime that might actually mitigate some of those challenges. So talk to me about your discussion with Alexander Sager.
Yeah, you're right. We did cover all of those areas, and those are sorts of themes that we've touched on again for quite some while. You know, this whole public-private relationship is something that I'm a big fan of, as you know, and I do think it's the only way that we're going to find some way forward in terms of dealing with cybercrime, because the challenges that face government and law enforcement are huge when it comes to trying to catch cybercriminals, or indeed control the environment in which they are operating. And they can't do that alone. You know, they have to do that with the cooperation, the collaboration of the private sector. And we did talk about some of the very specific themes and issues that are occupying people's minds at the moment. You know, ransomware. Ransomware continues to be a thorn in the side of organizations. And yet we know that it will continue to be prevalent. It will continue to be widely available as a service. So crime as a service raising its head again. And it's also something that, you know, boards, organizations are really having to think through. And Alexander and I talked about, you know, the different approaches that organizations are taking to ransomware. So determining whether or not they're going to be paying ransoms, what that might mean, what sort of financial threshold they're prepared to consider in terms of coming to those conclusions. But of course, it's very important to have figured all of these things out beforehand, because you really don't want to be doing it when you're in the midst of a crisis. So some really good insight there as well. And of course, Alexander's been working in this space for many years, and he is something of a figurehead, I suppose, when it comes to the way in which, you know, law enforcement can work more collaboratively with the private sector. So it was really nice to talk to him. I hadn't seen him in a little while. He reminded me that he'd, I think, come to one of our congresses. It must be something like 12 years ago now. Mm. So it was nice to reconnect with him.
One of the things that I found interesting about that conversation is that in an era of extreme polarization, it seems that there is more of an effort all the time to create collaborations, to find creative ways of reaching out and bringing people in. Are you seeing that? Do you think that's a fair assessment, that one of the responses to our divides is creative collaboration creation?
If you look at cybercrime, which is sort of the area that we were covering in that particular session, and one of the challenges that has existed for a very, very long time is this cross-jurisdictional challenge. So the need for collaboration has always been there. And cybercriminals have been very, very good at doing it themselves. You know, the good guys have been a little bit slow on the uptake mm-hmm. in terms of how they can collaborate and work better across borders. So I think it's been an evolution. I think that the will, you know, has been there, but putting it into action, actually getting things together, you know, these are extremely complicated conversations that have to take place and discussions, and it does actually involve compromise on the part of some of the jurisdictions that we're talking about, because in the scope, you know, it's absolutely massive. And we're talking about, you know, multiple countries, mm-hmm. multiple jurisdictions, different legislation. And so to really sort of be able to reach a conclusion on some of these things, as he was talking about with that Budapest Convention on Cybercrime, is really an achievement. And hopefully it will help in the future for law enforcement to take a very much more proactive role in terms of combating cybercrime.
Listeners might want to actually refer to ISF's review and gap analysis of cybersecurity legislation and cybercriminality policies in 8 countries, as it really relates to this conversation, and they may find that very useful. Last conversation, and certainly not least, our episode featuring Professor Federico Varese, who was fascinating and wonderful to listen to. He's a professor of criminology and head of the sociology department at Nuffield College at Oxford University. And you and Professor Varese discussed the history of organized crime in Russia and around the world, the mafia's movement into cybercrime, and what the future might hold for those criminal organizations. Tell us more about that.
It was a fascinating discussion, and really built on, I think, you know, some of the discussions we've had in the past with, I remember Misha Glenny, you know, talking to Misha on the work he'd done with the mafia. Of course, that was turned into TV program, a BBC program, McMafia. And we've spoken to others as well. But what Federico really brought, I think, was a real sort of first-hand insight into the way that some of these organizations do operate. You know, he has spent a significant amount of time, as he said, working to better understand the way in which mafia organizations are structured. And he referred a lot to his experience, you know, with the Sicilian mafia, the Russian mafia, and indeed others. And so to position that within the context of the way in which cybercrime is evolving, the way in which the dark web is evolving, all of these sorts of things, I think, bring a very different perspective. Now, hopefully, a lot of people listening to this won't ever need to come up against the sorts of challenges that he was talking about. But I think it did provide a very interesting context. You know, having talked to Alexander previously about specifically cybercrime, we hadn't touched too much on that in terms of mafia-based organizations. But to get into that aspect of it with Federico, who's still very active in terms of exploring how these organizations are structured and really what they're doing, I think was absolutely fascinating. I think one of the takeaways for me was quite an interesting, I don't know if it's a dilemma, but it was certainly a discussion around the strategy for law enforcement. You know, we talked about the success that law enforcement had had in closing down some sites. So Silk Road, for instance, I think was one of the ones that we talked about. And Federico made the point that, yes, okay, so that was shut down, but then three other similar ones pop up.
Mm-hmm. Whack-a-mole. We've used that term so many times.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it is the correct approach to try to close some of these things down. Or, as he was suggesting, is the new strategy a better new strategy to infiltrate those sites, do things like leave false reviews for sellers or sell bad products or just make it very much harder for criminals to rely on their own website and networks? Now, is that a more effective way and perhaps a more proactive way of dealing with the phenomenon that we're faced with today? So some really interesting perspectives, I thought, that he brought to organized crime.
Yeah, agreed. Well, this has been a really fascinating and I think very timely season. I always enjoy our content, but I do feel like this season has been even more responsive and timely than ever before. Listeners, we hope you've found this episode and this season helpful. I'll remind you to take a look at the show notes where you'll find ISF resources related to today's discussion, including information about 5G and the paper about cybercrime legislation I mentioned earlier. And of course, all of the episodes we discussed today are available in our podcast feed, so be sure to check those out if you've missed any episodes. We're taking a week off, but we'll be back after that with another season of timely conversations with engaging guests and actionable insights for your organization. In the meantime, we ask that you rate and review our podcast in Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. And you can tell us about what topics you'd like to hear us address on the podcast at securityforum.org, which is where you can find our catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. Find us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak, senior producer Katie Flood, mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.